Hello and welcome to the podcast that can't be doing with a clever set piece routine with decoy runners and a drilled ball along the floor, and would much rather pump a hopeful floated cross to the far post. It's the big man up top.
Yes, it is. Hello, Ed.
How are you doing, Joe?
Yes, very good. Thank you, Ed. I do like a free kick just launched into the box to see what happens.
It's the only way to do it, don't you think?
Yeah.
How are you doing, Joe?
Yeah, we're going up, Ed.
Who's we?
We're going up, aren't we?
Who's we?
England.
Oh, of course.
Promotion.
Promotion, yeah, good.
Promotion to League A. How'd you feel about that?
Well, I honestly couldn't care less. Is there going to be an open top bus parade?
I think it's only right, isn't it?
Yeah.
A win yesterday avoided a playoff game to go up, Ed.
Nobody wants that, do they?
Well, arguably, it would mean the next international break was more interesting, because
right.
Now it's just a friendly, whereas it could have been an exciting playoff game.
Oh gosh, and they're still having the friendlies. I thought this was the end of the friendlies.
No.
I thought that was the whole reason we signed
no,
up for
it. There's still friendlies. Anyway, we'll talk about England a bit later.
We will. We had a fantastic email from Mike, the Chelsea fan.
Did we?
We did, yes. And he is a recent listener to the pod. And he just sent us a really lovely, quite a long email actually, but just saying some really, really lovely things about the podcast. Very, very encouraging. He compared us favourably to Talk Sport and Five Live, Joe.
Oh, well, I'll take that. Can I be Adrian Childs, please?
You absolutely can.
Who do you want to be?
I'll be the Chappers, I think.
The nation's sweetheart.
Yeah, everyone loves Chappers.
Yeah.
I'll go for that. He also said he'd been sharing the podcast with his mates as well. So I'd like to set a challenge to all our listeners, Joe, to do the same.
That would be nice, wouldn't
share
it?
Share the podcast with your mates. He also gave some very helpful suggestions for topics he'd like us to cover. He asked us to have a look at the topic of when players have public failings, and I think that is something we would like to cover at some point.
Yeah, it's a big topic, isn't it? And I think we could dedicate a whole episode to that.
We definitely could. One thing that I do have to add that Mike did say, I'll just read out what he said. He said, "What is our response as Christians to the tactical foul?"
Oh, interesting.
So when a team has an opportunity to attack, but an opposing player takes a yellow card for the team by fouling them, society seems to praise this, and attacking teams like Man City, Arsenal and Chelsea ask their players, Rodri, Enzo Fernandez, etc. But is it fair? What do you think of a tactical foul, Joe?
Oh, I think it's one of those that if your team does it, you love it. If a team you're playing does it against you, you hate it. I think Rodri is known for this.
Oh, he loves
He's
a good tactical
the
master
foul. Of the tactical foul.
Is there a Bible verse for that, Joe?
Don't know if there is. If there is, then I've not seen it.
Well, please send in if you spot a, you know, hidden verse in Deuteronomy.
Yeah, it could be in a Message version.
Exactly, yeah, good stuff.
You know, I learned this week that my wife very kindly listens to this podcast.
She does.
She listens on 1.2 speed.
Does she?
I don't know why.
Well, she's got a lot of stuff to do in a day.
She's a busy woman.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I'm offended by that. I can't imagine 1.2 speeds up that much.
No, it's not too bad. It's not like 1.5.
No. That's a whole different ballgame.
The thing I would say is I definitely knew that your wife listened because she sends me regular negative feedback
does
on
she?
Instagram. So, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
She's not happy about the Marco debacle.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, Ed.
Yes. Because
this has been quite a controversial topic over the last week, hasn't it?
I don't think it has. You think it has, don't you?
Well, I think, obviously, this is to do with our trivia, which we're going to get onto in a minute. But last week, the answer to your question was Marco Royce.
Yes.
The whole idea, Ed, of this quiz is that the first name of this footballer shares a name of a book in the Bible. Now,
yes.
I don't see Marco in the Bible. I was willing to let it slide, but I've had a bit of feedback this week that people are in uproar about this.
Are they really?
And what I've done, along with producer Anthony earlier
right.
on, we looked at the German Bible
yeah.
called Die Bible. And we looked at the books of the Bible and their names. And I looked at Mark
yeah.
just to see, in case it was down as Marco, and I was going to let you off.
Yeah.
It's down as Marcus.
Yeah, exactly. Equally acceptable derivative of Mark.
I would accept Marcus. I wouldn't accept Marco.
Look, I want this podcast to run forever, Joe. We really need all the foreign
sure.
variations we
okay.
can get.
Okay, well, I think we need to establish some ground rules.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I think it's absolutely fine.
Okay, as long as you're happy with it.
As long as I'm happy with it, because I'm the one that is losing currently.
Sure. Well, speaking of, are you ready for this week's question?
Not really, no.
Well, it's time in the podcast for it, so you better be. Now, this week, the question doesn't actually come from me.
Oh.
I've had a bit of help this week from Jack, who's been in touch with the podcast before. Jack, the Sheffield Wednesday fan. You might remember that he took issue with your explanation of the RSPB.
I do remember.
Which many of us did.
Yeah, thank you for that, Jack.
Yeah, well, he's come up with a question for this week, and I want to pose it to you.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready, yes.
Okay. Which spiky defender played for Ipswich, Newcastle, Wigan and Sunderland in their Premier League years?
See, that's oh, goodness me. Got to be honest, the only thought I had was, I think Titus Bramble played for those teams.
Interesting.
So that was the own, that was the, but that's, I'm going to have to think about this.
Why are you ignoring the spiky though?
Well,
I think that's part of the question.
Well, it could be, but I can't work out what that could possibly be.
Okay, interesting. Well, I'll give you the rest of the episode to come up with your answer. Maybe you can think a little bit harder about the spiky bit.
Yeah. I'm gonna need a bit of extra time.
So as we said earlier, Ed, we are riding on cloud nine today.
We are.
Due to England's promotion from League B to League A in the Nations League. It's the one we've all been waiting for.
It's the one we've all been waiting for.
60 years of hurt are finally over.
Oh, gosh.
And here we are. Three lines on the shirt. Did you watch either of the games this week?
I watched the game against Ireland.
Yeah.
I missed the first 20 minutes, but I got into most of it. I watched the good bit.
The second half.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Ireland were actually okay.
They were. I thought they looked really solid.
Up until the sending off, I thought they looked quite good going forward. You know, they got a few good players. Evan Ferguson up front.
Yeah.
Starting to come into a bit of form. But yeah, ultimately, it's the red card that kind of undid them.
Yeah, and that's my sort of overarching worry, is there's been lots of, oh, very good England, 5-0, very good. They did have a man advantage against Ireland. And I think, with all due respect to Ireland, their whole game was set up on the let's stay solid, let's stay compact, which they did very well and really limited England's chances.
Yeah.
And then the second you take a man out of that, it's going to make things very difficult, isn't it?
It became very easy very quickly.
The thing I particularly enjoyed, there was a moment where Gallagher tried a Rabona from 18 yards.
It was quite, I think this summed up the whole
it summed up
Nations
the Nations League,
didn't it?
Yeah. And I think the thing is, look, listen, we all know what it's like, Joe. You go to Spain for a few weeks, you get immersed in the culture.
Sure.
And before long, you're telling your mates they're pronouncing paella wrong. You know?
Do you think that this was what that was?
Yeah, I think so.
He's been like, in Spain for a couple of months and
lads,
I'm going to try this.
Look what they're all doing, lads, over there. Yeah. You know, so no, it did get a bit silly, but well done to Carsley. I'm quite happy for him.
He's had you have to say 5 wins out of 6.
Yeah,
it's not bad, is
it? It's not bad at all.
You know, he's done a job. He's gone back to the under-21s, and it's time for Tommy Tuchs.
It certainly
is. Are you ready?
I'm very much ready, yes.
Be interesting to see where it goes from here. Now, moving on to Scotland.
Yep.
Now, before this game, they'd just beaten Croatia 1-0. And before that game, they'd been on a run of 10 winless games. But I think this was quite an important win for Scotland.
Massive.
As far as the Nations League can go. They are in League A. I think they're probably going to go down. They've still got a chance. They play Poland on Monday night. We are recording on a Monday, so we don't know what the score is.
No.
Do you want to guess what the score is? Not really.
No. 2-1, Poland.
2-1, sure.
I think it's difficult, isn't it? But having said that, momentum is everything. So let's see how they get on.
So just a quick roundup of the rest of the home nations. Northern Ireland beat Belarus 2-0 the other day, and they go on to play Luxembourg tonight. And Wales played Turkey, Ed.
Yes.
In a 0-0 draw. Now, I feel like they play Turkey every single international break. Or is that just me?
It's a little bit like how England always play Slovenia or Slovakia every other international break.
Yeah, they just seem to love playing each other. And Craig Bellamy in charge, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
Moved on from being Vincent Kompany's assistant. Didn't get the Bayern job.
No.
But he's gone on to manage Wales and doing quite a good job. Speaking of the international break, Ed, and I'm aware that we've kind of spoken tongue-in-cheek about it.
Yeah.
But I wanted to have a quick conversation about this. Now, I'm a fan of Liverpool, and that means every week I get to watch some of the best players in the world.
All right, wind it in.
Sure, fine. I get to watch the top of the game and get entertained every week. And when an international break comes along, it's a bit like I was enjoying that. Like, yeah. Now I have to watch England for a bit before we get back to watching Liverpool. But I'm aware
it's a step down.
It is a step down, Ed, yeah, of course it is. But I'm aware that's not everyone's outlook on this. You know, I saw an interesting tweet that we have this English perspective of the international break that it gets in the way. But actually, there are countries out there that their domestic league might not be that entertaining. They might not be that invested. And when an international break comes along, this is an opportunity to see some of their heroes in action. What are your thoughts on this?
I'm sort of in the same mindset as you. I'm a Stoke fan, as everybody knows, but I don't see the world's best every week on display. But equally, I do watch a lot of Premier League football as well. So I feel the same way as you in that the international break does just feel like a break in play. Mm. I would be going for a complete scrap of everything that wasn't a qualifier, in my opinion. The Nations League, I can do without it. And, you know, that's the thing is we're not just here for us and for our needs as English football fans. You know, FIFA have to juggle that. UEFA have to juggle that is football across the globe or across the continent. Maybe there's a conversation to be had there. And I think that actually moves us on really nicely to looking at the rest of the football that's happened. Because obviously there was no Premier League football, there was no Championship football. There was League One football. The international break has really affected games. In total, across League One, there were supposed to be 12 fixtures and 7 were called off. So if you've got a team, you're in League One, you've got a team where there's a few people who might get called up. The deadline to postpone is a week before the international game. So you have to put that into the EFL. But the deadline for call-ups is a few days later on the Monday. So you get this situation where there's an initial squad announced. Teams are then going, oh, we've got a few men down, so we're going to then postpone the game, or we're not going to postpone the game. Then what happens is you get the likes of Declan Rice and Cole Palmer dropping out late on. And so that then has this knock-on effect where players are getting called up to the England squad that wouldn't have been there. Mm. You're getting players then getting called up to the under-20s, etc. And this isn't just England, this is happening across the world. So clubs are just unsure as to whether they're going to actually play the following weekend or not, which is really affecting how they prep. And then, you know, in the case of some teams, they're having to play with a depleted squad.
Yeah.
In League One, as I said, there were 7 games called off. Out of the remaining 5, 3 were 0-0 draws. Cambridge versus Barnsley drew 1 each, and the only game of the weekend to see a win was Stockport beating Wrexham 1-0 at home. And so the quality of what's happening in League One as a result, a direct result of the international break, is quite stark. And so, yeah, I just think it's something that we have to think about, because it isn't just Premier League that's affected. It's all across the football pyramid. But I actually went to a game, Joe.
Yes, you had a little day out on Saturday, didn't you?
Yeah, well, the only game where there was a win was Stockport County beating Wrexham at home, which was a game I was at.
Did you have a good time?
Oh, let me tell you, what a joy. The best way I can describe it is that it felt like what real football should be. So it was a great atmosphere. You had James McLean acting as a pantomime villain for Wrexham.
As he does.
There was a friend of mine, Matt, who invited me to the game, and we were right next to the Wrexham fans. There was a Wrexham fan giving it large right next to us. He was ejected after 17 minutes.
They also have their own big man up top, don't they? Kyle Wooten.
They do.
Was he playing?
He was, and he was fantastic. Stockport definitely deserved their win. Great game, great day out. I'm going to move on to League Two.
Please do.
League Two leaders Port Vale got back to winning ways to go 5 points clear after a late goal away at Morecambe. Whilst local rivals Crewe moved into second with a comfortable 2-0 win at home to Notts County, and things are heating up and it sets things up nicely as Vale host Crewe on Monday the 25th under the lights.
That's a big game.
Elsewhere in League 2, Harrogate secured a very late win at home to Chesterfield, which was a really entertaining game actually. Some great goals in that one. Do go check out the highlights. Also in League 2, this is just a fantastic story. Swindon Town manager Ian Holloway... We love him, don't we?
What a throwback.
Everyone loves Ian Holloway. He's been talking about some strange goings on at the club. I don't know if you've seen this, Joe.
No, I haven't.
So this is an article from the BBC Sport, and the headline is Holloway claims Swindon training ground is haunted. This feels like a stretch, but we'll go there. Holloway said there were some strange things happening after Robins captain Ollie Clark ruptured a tendon in his ankle during training last week. The 61-year-old added he would be asking his wife to cleanse the area with sage as it is close to an ancient burial site.
Wow. It sounds like he's been listening to that other UCB podcast, hasn't
yes,
he?
Yeah. Well, so the Mysterious or Miraculous podcast.
Bit of cross-promotion.
Yeah. So definitely go and have a listen to that, or he should do. We're talking all about that sort of stuff.
Yes.
And, you know...
That's not us, by the way.
It's a serious... We're not
covering that, it's are we?
No. We're very much not qualified to do that. So, yes, Ian Holloway has a haunted training ground.
Let's see if it works.
Apparently, yeah. Just elsewhere, a lovely little quirk this weekend in the Scottish Championship. Every team in the Championship, this was before the weekend just gone, played the one directly below or above them in the table.
Oh, lovely.
So we had first versus second, third versus fourth, fifth versus sixth, seventh versus eighth, and ninth versus tenth. Very satisfying.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And obviously it's been completely ruined because some of those teams have climbed up and have leapfrogged and all that sort of stuff. But I thought that was fantastic. And then in the WSL, Arsenal beat Spurs 3-0 away in the North London Derby, and Chelsea went to the top of the WSL with what the BBC described as a statement win over Man City. So, yeah, but very interesting in the WSL.
So today is International Men's Day.
Yeah.
And we thought that to mark that today, we were going to have a conversation about mental health. And we've got an interview coming up with Simon Thomas, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
But we thought it would be worth touching on quite a big story from this week. So you might have seen towards the start of last week, a few videos came out about David Coote, the Premier League referee. He had some choice words to say about Jurgen Klopp, and there was fewer videos of him saying some questionable things and doing some questionable things, and we thought it might be good to have a bit of a conversation about that to tie in with this subject.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, is people have been saying all sorts of things about his actions and what they think of them, and I don't think we're here to sort of comment on that.
No,
I think
it's essentially been a bit of a pile-on,
yes,
which tends to happen in this when this kind of thing goes down. And I think we wanted to look at a different angle to this story.
Which is about the mental health of people in the football industry, players, managers, referees as well. And it just seemed like a pertinent conversation to have at this moment.
Yeah, we thought this would be a good conversation to have. So we've got this interview with Simon Thomas. He's well known for being a bit of an ambassador around men's mental health in the game. He's a big Norwich City fan, which he goes on to talk about, who are doing some great things in the community. So yeah, here's a chat with Simon Thomas.
Simon Thomas, thank you for joining us on The Big Man Up Top.
Absolute pleasure. Nice to see you.
We're here at the Christians in Media Conference. Could you share just briefly a little bit about what you're hoping to bring today?
We're doing a section on kind of mental health within media. And obviously in my role as, well, now Soccer Saturday presenter, but over the last 2 years within the world of sport that I broadcast in, I've had my own mental health struggles. And it's been something that I have chosen to speak out about quite publicly. And I think it's a really important thing. It's an age-old cliche, but there's power in it, which is whenever we face struggles in life, whatever they might be, whether it is mental health, the power of knowing you're not alone is really important. And I know that within the industry that I work in, both amongst Christians like ourselves and non-Christians, anxiety, mental health issues, imposter syndrome, all those kind of things are really endemic within the industry. It's important that we are able to voice that, speak about it, and actually be vulnerable about it enough to say, like I will do today, but I also do it in terms of my online presence. Just say, look, this is something I have to deal with. This is how I cope with it. This is how I use it as kind of almost like a source of power to do what I do. It connects with people and it resonates with people, and it reminds them that they may be facing something really similar at the moment, but they're not on their own with this.
And I think your journey has very much come from the place of you're somebody in the public eye and you've had a career for many years on TV, and you're being very vulnerable about your struggles over the years and all that sort of stuff. Footballers are also people who are in the public eye, very much so, under the microscope.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of chat about the well-being of players recently. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there was the whole issue around the Greece players having to play a Nations League game the day after grieving the loss of a teammate. What's your sort of comment on maybe the landscape around footballers' mental well-being at the moment?
I think it's beginning to change, but it's a slow burner. I remember when I came away from Sky in the autumn of 2017, having developed some really pronounced anxiety issues and panic attacks. And I can't say who it was, but one of the people that I work with in front of camera for Sky, an ex-footballer, a pundit, rang me. And he spoke about his own struggles in this area. Now, you would look at him and you would listen to him, you'd remember him playing and think, there's no way. He surely doesn't struggle with this stuff, and yet did. I remember thinking at the time, gosh, if he was able to open up and speak about this publicly in the way that he's speaking about it to me now down the phone, this would have such a big impact. And I think we are beginning to see more footballers talking about it. You know, there's so much unseen stuff within the world of football. For those players who find themselves consistently on the bench, never getting a chance to play in the first team, might getting 4 or 5 minutes here and there, mentally, that's a really big challenge for them. The world will just say, but you're paid handsomely. What's the problem? They want to be doing what they love doing. That's a really big mental battle for a lot of footballers. For those footballers, and I have no doubt that Rodri right now, who's going to be out for the rest of the season at Man City, will be facing some big mental health challenges because he's not able to do what he loves doing. Yes, he might be beautifully remunerated for what he does and lives a lavish lifestyle and those kind of things, but what he wants to do is play football. It's a finite period he can play for. And also that big question of how we look after and support footballers whose actual careers are very short. As they'll often say in the world of sport, you're a long time retired, because you are. If you live a long and happy life, the vast majority of your life will be spent not doing what you love doing, which was playing football. And that was your job as well. So it's a huge problem, but I think we're having more conversations with it. We've had a couple of really good discussions about it on Soccer Saturday in the last season or so. I think in my role, that's something I can bring. Paul Merson, who I sit alongside most weeks, we know about his various battles, his addictions as well. He's incredibly powerful when he speaks because he speaks from a place of authenticity. It's not just, I'm passing comment, I've lived this, I know what it's like. So I believe it is changing. But it's going to take time. We have to reverse the culture of seeing vulnerability as a weakness, particularly amongst men, particularly in the testosterone-fueled world of football, and actually say, being vulnerable and admitting to a problem, talking about it. It doesn't always have to be public, of course it doesn't, but having that freedom within the dressing room, the freedom within a football club to say, actually, I'm struggling, that should be viewed as a sign of strength, not a sign of weakness.
And I think it's important not just for people in the public eye, but for all of us to take care of our mental health. You are obviously a big Norwich fan. You're involved in Norwich City. I remember the great mental health video they did around suicide awareness. Incredible stuff. What do you think clubs can be doing for the mental health of their fans? How do you think clubs can be involved in that conversation too?
Well, I don't want to say this just as a Norwich fan and sound ridiculously biased, but I do think Norwich are one of the clubs leading the way on this. That video that you talk about last year, if people haven't seen it, just put it into Google and YouTube it, Norwich City Samaritans. And it was an amazing video about what's going on with that person you sit next to every week at a ground. Actually, on a broader level, what's going on in the life of that woman who sits opposite you at work, or the guy who sits next to you at work, or the guy you play tennis with once a week. Because all of us in life put on masks, we put on kind of costumes of confidence, but actually behind the scenes we might be struggling. And I love the fact that Norwich, just a couple of weeks ago, rather than a minute's silence, because it was World Mental Health Day, they basically did a minute at the ground where they encouraged everybody in the stands to turn around to the person next to them and have a conversation, ask them how they're doing. Often in life, when we're asked how we're doing, a typical bloke response would be, not bad. I always say, ask twice, how are you really doing? Because if you sense something isn't quite right, listen, they may not want to talk, but they may open up. And I think Norwich are doing an amazing thing in trying to open up conversations amongst fans, be a leading light in terms of hosting mental health forums at the club that I've been part of over the last few years. And it's a really important conversation. But, you know, it's a really important thing to say when it comes to mental health, because often we'll hear it's good to talk, it's important to talk. Absolutely. But it's also important to take action as well. It can't just be about talking. It has to be something that's proactive. So in terms of the world of football, it's no use talking about how we support players better when a career comes to an end very early, when an injury ends a season early. It's about what do we put in place. And I'm not just talking about finances, I'm talking about in terms of counselling, in terms of support for them, to making that adjustment from doing something they loved one minute that was gone the next. So it has to be conversation, opening up conversations, talking about it, coupled with action.
Well, this is a really important conversation, and I think the first big step is talking about it,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
And so thank you for all that you're doing in this space. It feels like we're scratching the surface. We could be chatting
There's a lot, yeah.
We'll get you on again at some point to have a more of a deep dive. But the last question, mm-hmm, this is the Big Man Up Top Card podcast.
Oh, right, yeah.
So
Great name, by the way. Great name.
We love big men up top. Yeah. You know, you're unfashionable but gets the job done striker. What I want to know is, who is your dream big man up top?
Well, I'm unsurprisingly going to pick a Norwich player. I could go for Peter Crouch because he did have a loan spell with us. He arrived with Darren Huckabee on loan and they were brilliant, particularly obviously Darren Huckabee. But he wasn't at the club for very long. I could go for Ewan Roberts, who was the kind of toothless striker we had, big guy up front, loved to head the ball. But I'm going to go because he is tall. I know he divides opinion in terms of 6'06 and his punditry now, but Chris Sutton. Because he was absolutely brilliant for us. He was originally a central defender, so big guy at the back, became a big guy at the front. And in those heady days of the sort of early 90s, when Norwich were pulling up trees in the Premier League, we were 8 points clear at Christmas in the first ever Premier League campaign of 92-93. Can you believe that? But Sutton was amazing. And then unfortunately, the big bucks of then the big Blackburn came calling and he went. So he'd be my big man up top.
That's an excellent choice. Simon Thomas, thank you for your time.
Pleasure.
I think Simon had some really good things to say there, Ed, particularly around when a player gets a big injury or comes to the end of their career. I think we don't often think about the mental well-being of a player in that situation.
Yeah, definitely. What he was saying and what he sort of really helped me to see as well in that conversation is that for these players, we often just think, oh, it's fine, they're loaded. But actually, yeah, these guys, they exist to play football. That is their whole purpose and meaning in life. Mm. And actually, when you take that away from them, whether they're retiring or whether they're injured for a long time, it can be absolutely devastating to people.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you use the word purpose there, because I think that's something that we as Christians have something to hold on to.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we have this purpose to live out our life in a meaningful way, to be as much like Jesus as we can. We kind of hold on to that purpose. You know, there's Bible verses that say that God has a purpose and a plan for our life. When we look at footballers, essentially the whole purpose of their life from when they're young to when they're in the late 30s is to be a footballer, isn't it? That's all they ever wanted. It's their dream. And essentially when they get to that point of retirement or a big injury comes, they don't really know where to move on to. I think it could be quite hard to get into a mindset of what is next.
Yeah, definitely. There's a few really interesting case studies on this. I think one is the story of Richarlison.
Yeah.
So he has spoken about his struggles with mental health, and particularly after the 2022 World Cup, he spoke to ESPN Brazil, who he was quoted saying, "Even I, who seem to be mentally strong, after the World Cup, it seemed like it all fell apart." And he went on to talk about how going to therapy had a hugely positive effect on him. And he actually said, "I think the therapist, like it or not, saved my life. Mm. Now, we can have a debate about whether a therapist can save you or whether only Jesus saves. And I think that's definitely a conversation that we should have. But I think what we would say regardless is talking therapies, counseling, whatever it may be, is something that certainly I speak very, very positively of. Yeah. I'm really glad that Richarlison's story has this chapter in it where he can say, "I was in this place and thankfully I'm not there anymore."
Yeah, and I think there's a similar situation last season, wasn't there, with Dele Alli, who has also come out spoken about his mental health battles and his struggle with addiction as well. And I think it's all about starting a conversation, isn't it? Simon touched on it in that interview there, that this does, you know, there's much more that we should be doing, but this starts with a conversation.
The thing for me is there are so many statistics out there. You almost can't move for the mental health facts. We're good at talking about that, which is really good. Just looking at the most recent statistics from the NHS, 12.5% of men in England have a mental health disorder. Men are 3 times more likely to die by suicide in England than females. That was from Samaritans. So these are really stark facts. But I think like we've done a great bit of work on that. Now it's like, okay, this is a topic that's at the forefront of society. What are we going to go and do from there? And we often, in our modern ways, can think, well, what's the Bible got to do with mental health? Actually, it's an awful, awful lot. I feel, for me personally, it has been the single greatest resource for me keeping my mental health ticking over. There's a couple of scriptures I'd like to read to you, Joe.
Please do.
Psalm 23 is one that we all know really, really well. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. The psalmist is talking about how the Lord is leading him and guiding him through life in a way that is, you know, helping in the midst of everything that's going on around him to calm waters. And so I think that's really amazing. There's a fantastic whole story of Elijah when he was fleeing to Horeb in 1 Kings. There's a moment where he is suicidal. He prays to the Lord and says, take my life. He's anxious and he's worried. And an angel comes to him and doesn't say, buck your ideas up, Elijah. Yeah. He says, get up, eat, go to sleep. And he starts to sort of put those practical steps in about eating well and sleeping well. But ultimately, coming into the New Testament is that Jesus in Matthew 11 says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And I think that's the thing for me is life can be really difficult. And how many people could put their hands up and say, I feel burdened. I'm in need of rest.
Yeah.
I think most of us could do that, at least at some point in our day-to-day lives. We can find peace in Jesus that is unlike anything else.
Absolutely. And I think there's a few practical things that we can do as well when thinking about this. And I think this is why we wanted to talk about David Coote as well in this sphere. You know, we talk about how conversations need to be had more around this kind of thing. But also, I think it's about surrounding yourself with good people.
Yeah.
People your age, people your stage, that you can journey your life with.
And that's the thing, is that it can be so easy to sort of jump on the bandwagon of sharing funny memes and stuff. That it's really easy to do.
Yeah, we all do it.
It's the big topic and everyone wants to talk about it. But I suppose all of that is contributing to this pylon.
It's all part of it, yeah.
And look, at the end of the day, like I said, there will be time to have the discussions about his behaviour and whether that's acceptable for a Premier League referee, and also about the integrity of match officials. That's another big one. But I think first and foremost, we've just got to say, hey, are you okay? We hope he's okay. And like you say, we sort of imagine if we were in that situation, how we must be feeling. And yeah, you're right. Hopefully he's got some good people around him.
And then obviously the overarching thing here is that we should be praying for him.
Yeah.
His life has essentially been turned upside down by this. And it's about showing grace as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know if you remember, 2019, there was a program called Harry's Heroes.
Yes, I do vaguely remember it.
So this was this short TV series where Harry Redknapp got together a bunch of ex-pros for one last game together, and there was a lot of conversation in this program about mental health, which I found really interesting. You know, there's people like Paul Merson, Robbie Fowler, David Seaman in this program, basically talking about how as ex-pros, they never had this space to talk about what was going on. It was such a taboo subject around them. And there's a quote here from David Seaman from that show that said, "It's a shame that back in that time, we weren't equipped to try to even recognise that. I think now, because there is more awareness of mental health, more people, especially more men, are willing to talk about it and get it out into the open." So they're essentially saying they really wish this was a conversation had when they were pros.
Yeah, and now that we are having those conversations, that can only be a good thing.
Absolutely.
But as with all these things, it's an ongoing issue.
Yeah.
And we'll keep making progress with it.
So Ed, how are you getting on with the word spiky?
Oh, I've got to be honest, I've not really thought about it at all.
No, there's been a lot going on since that, hasn't there?
I know. Can you read the question out again? I am going to have to take some time to think about this.
Okay, the question was, which spiky defender played for Ipswich, Newcastle, Wigan and Sunderland?
I've got to be honest, I'm really struggling with this.
Okay.
Really struggling with this. I said Titus Bramble earlier on, just because I I feel like I remember him playing for Wigan and Sunderland and possibly Ipswich. I don't know. So I'm going to go for Titus Bramble.
You're correct, Ed. It's Titus Bramble. Spiky. Bramble. Spiky.
Oh, my goodness. See, this is it.
That's clever.
This quiz is hard enough as it is.
We're adding in a bit of cryptic.
Oh, yeah, that's just way too abstract.
Thank you very much to Jack for sending in that question.
Yeah, thanks, Jack.
You must
that
be happy
great.
With that.
Oh, I'm delighted. Yeah. No, yeah.
Well, you got there in the end. And we won't tell the listeners that you took about 10 minutes out of the podcast.
No, I didn't.
No,
not 10
it
minutes.
It was about just...
Very good. Well, that is all we've got time for. Thank you for listening to The Big Man Up Top. If you want to get in touch with the show, please ping us an email to podcasts@ucb.co.uk. Please follow, subscribe, give us good reviews, etc. And if you've enjoyed this, tell your mates. Let's get the word out. Also, a huge thank you to our producer, Anthony. And also, a massive thank you to Maisie Bartlett, who helped us with a lot of the research for today's show. And there will be a new episode next week, won't there, Joe?
There will, I think, yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. We'll see you next week.
See you then.